Welcome to the new edition of Chewing Clock after quite the hiatus. My name is Dimitri Ravanis. Tyler McComas is off for another day. That is why we were sort of late getting this week started. But Andrew Stevens, the man that makes the straw that stirs the drink here at Armchair All-Americans, is joining me in Tyler's place today. He is on the phone, but he is making the effort after a long day of travel. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing quite well. I had a bit of an issue getting from Newark to New Orleans, but we are ready to go. Dimitri, after following you on social media for a little while, it looks like you had quite the travel day the other day as well. How was your trip?
Oh, it was lovely. I don't know if you saw this on social media. I'm sitting in this tiny little fishing village in Ireland called Howth, and it is... It's everything you think of when you think of the phrase Irish fishing village, right? Like beautiful sailboats, beautiful beach as far as the eye can see. And it is a touristy destination because there's some good hiking around there. And this guy comes walking down the street in a fairly new Alabama hat. And okay. I look at him and I say, "Hey, man, Roll Tide," expecting to hear back a Southern accent, a fellow tourist say Roll Tide. And instead what I get is the thickest Irish brogue Roll Tide that I've ever heard. So I had to stop him and I say, "Hang on, how did this happen?" And he said that that they get the college football primetime games from ESPN there, and he just became the world's biggest Tua fan over the last couple of seasons. Last year he felt like he needed to make a pilgrimage to Tuscaloosa to see Tua play in person, thought he found a great deal on tickets to the Alabama LSU game in September. The problem is that in September, Alabama played UL Lafayette, and it took him a quarter of being there before he realized this was not LSU. But he loved Tuscaloosa. He loves the team. And it was just a crazy, like, think of all the places, because you're an SEC guy too, right?
Think of the craziest
place that you have ever had that SEC, whether it's connection or rivalry, rear its head. I mean, to me, like, now Irish Fishing Village has to top the list for me.
Well, yeah, I remember. So I was in Italy back over the Thanksgiving break, and I went at like 2 a.m. to an Italian bar to watch the Saints. I think it was the Saints Eagles game or something. And there was a pack of University of Florida students that were on study abroad there. And so they were somehow also Eagles fans. And so for those don't know, I'm a Georgia grad and grew up in Baton Rouge as an LSU fan. And so I hate Florida, and we were playing the Eagles at the time. And so I was like, how I am in some far-flung bar in Florence, Italy, and I have found apparently my mortal sports enemies right here in the same bar.
Yeah, it's bananas, man. I mean, it is crazy how this conference sort of ties people together. I don't want to tie into, or I don't want to buy into the hashtag "It Just Means More" movement, but come on, like that, we are two walking stories with that. We should be in the next commercial. I will happily dress up in the sheer white dress that girl who might be 40, might be 20, you would believe either, is in for.
I was about to say, we could rock the hell out of a sundress. We could
absolutely.
Do, you know, Dimitri, we need to set up a Men of Armchair All in Sundresses calendar so we can start sending out to the listeners.
I love it. I will invest in straw hats with yellow bows for all of us for the photos.
That's exactly. Plenty of monograms.
Right, of course. All right, so today's topic that we were going to dive into is, what are the leashes for some of the coaches in their first years on the job, on their new job, in 2019? And we have five that sort of jumped out to me. And the leash can be anything. Like the what it is that the fan base wants to accomplish is very different for the five schools that I came up with. Let's go in alphabetical order of the five schools that I selected. Let's start with Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins. The leash on Georgia Tech, or maybe I should say it this way, Andrew, Jeff Collins is on the hot seat when, if he does not accomplish what?
So I think Jeff Collins kind of is, he's in what I would say the most unique situation.
Absolutely.
Just because he's going in and he has the expectation of, I may have a team that leads the FBS in sacks allowed this year. Because, I mean, going from a triple option offense to something that is going to a relative spread offense that is going to just require bigger offensive linemen. I mean, as a Georgia fan in 2016, I remember just having to bring in grad transfers to fill in patches there. And the guy that I worked with had been covering the team for 20 years, and he said it was the worst offensive line he had seen. And so I think Georgia Tech doesn't have any big enough offensive linemen on their current roster. And so I think they're going to be relying on sort of the grad transfer route. They're going to be relying on JUCO guys. And so if they're able to find any sort of success on the offensive line, I think that that will allow them to be at least competent this year. And so I think Jeff Collins just needs to prove competence. And so if he can get in a, I mean, they went 2-10 3 or 4 years ago. And yeah, so I think if he can get in a 4-8 type season this year and then really build on it and say bowl game in year two is a realistic expectation, then I would say that as long as he continues an upward trajectory, he should have the typical built-in 4 or 5 year plan for a new head coach. And I think there's a chance that just because of how Georgia Tech has been over the last sort of two decades in an identity as a recent program, I think he may have the longest leash on this coach's list.
Okay, so I agree with you that he will have the longest leash on this coach's list, but I'm going to say if he does not have an offense that can win football games within 4 years, he's on the hot seat. I think everyone that follows either that program or the ACC recognizes that he is trying to change a on-field culture with guys that are not built for what he wants to do. So people are going to be patient. But within 4 years, if this is a very pro-style run-run incomplete pass-punt kind of offense, people are going to lose patience with him real quick. I think he's winning a lot of fans, turning Georgia Tech into the University of Atlanta. But I do think that if they do not see a quarterback that is capable of being selected in the NFL draft within 4 years, people are going to start to lose patience with him.
I agree. And I want to throw one last quick point in on your University of Atlanta thing. I think that that plays into not only the success of the on-field product, but I think the way that he embraces ultimately the college football hub of, you could argue is the college football hub of the country. I mean, they put the Hall of Fame there just because it is the largest city in the central area that the sport thrives. And so I think if he is able to find a way, I mean, Paul Johnson really suffered from, I don't give a shit, I'm kind of an old curmudgeon-y type guy, I'm not really going to or embrace a city that is extremely young, vibrant, hip, cultural, I mean, very culturally relevant. And so if he can tap into that, I think that is going to go a long way in the Georgia Tech actually embracing him as a coach long term.
Yeah, we need to have a full episode talking about Atlanta at some point, because I think that what Jeff Collins is doing right now, like if you love this sport to the way that we do and you watch everything, like you got to be scratching your head wondering why Sean Elliott wasn't doing this from the moment he arrived at Georgia State. But we're a little bit behind here, so let's kind of move through some of these quickly. Dana Holgorsen is on the hot seat at Houston. When, if he does not accomplish what? Let me start with this one, because to me this is an easy one. Dana Holgorsen's on the hot seat at Houston if he does not win the AAC by 2020, period.
I think I was going to say he has two to three years to win the conference, and I think I would even take it one step further than that. In if he wins the conference, let's say at 9-3 or 10-2, let's say next year, I think he has to expand on that the year after. I think Dana Holgorsen ultimately has to become near college football playoff relevant and the best group of five team consistently every year to retain that job.
Yeah,
I don't think they can slip one bit.
I think that's realistic. I think he gets 1 year. Even though last year, you know, the comment was made, coaches get fired at Houston for winning 8 games. I think he gets 1 year where 7-8 games is going to be acceptable, because I think a lot of people recognize that team took a hit in talent and they have a much tougher schedule this year. But that being said, Dana Holgorsen wasn't sold on leaving a Power 5 job, a decent Power 5 job, to go to Houston, despite the fact that this is someone that loves the big city life to the point that when he was an assistant at Oklahoma State, he decided to live in Tulsa, an hour and a half away from Stillwater. He does not leave West Virginia for Houston if he's not sold that this is possible.
No, I completely agree. And I think that that selling is based in Tillman Fertitta's resource allocation for the program. Now, with that being said, he bought the Houston Rockets, told them he would go into the luxury tax, and has kind of quivered at that notion over the last season. And so I think if he thinks that we can be a UCF product within 2 to 3 years, and that is sustainable in a city like Houston, then I think that that is why he would have left a job like West Virginia.
Yeah, to be fair, Fertitta said he would go into the luxury tax. He did not say how often or that they would be good. So he didn't lie to Rockets.
There is, yeah, no repeater tax. Yeah, he forgot to leave that one out.
All right, at Kansas State, the brand new coach, Chris Kleeman, is on the hot seat when, if he does not accomplish what?
I think I'm going to put him as the second longest leash here.
Interesting.
Only because I think that the intelligent people at Kansas State and our Bosco's Boys podcast may be able to, they actually had Coach on last week, but I think that he is in a position where they finally recognize, okay, Bill Snyder is gone, and in that comes an entire culture change that needs to happen. And I think that they went out and got a guy like Kleeman because they knew this is a guy who has a culture, he has a policy, he has a way about setting sort of his chess pieces in place. And so I think that he is a guy that built a complete juggernaut proven winner on the level that he did it at. And that is the type of replication that you need when going out and trying to rebuild a program like he's receiving at Kansas State. For example, like, I don't think that they wanted to go out and hire a Mack Brown or a Les Miles of the world who was kind of set in their ways on the senior tour or victory tour, if you will. And I think they wanted to get a younger guy who really knew exactly what he wanted to do there.
So only one man has ever had success coaching at Kansas State. And I think that while I don't think Ron Prince got enough time to establish himself, it is very clear Ron Prince was not establishing anything when Bill Snyder retired the first time around, right?
Maintenance.
So I would say that on the one hand, I don't think Kansas State fans even really know the realities of what that program is capable of. That being said, I think that you're probably right. I think they got to a point where they realized at this point we are keeping Bill Snyder simply because we don't want to be rude, and we've got to sort of force our hand here the way Florida State did with Bobby Bowden a few years ago. I think really with Kleeman, it is going to be a matter in these first three seasons, let's say, of prove to us that what you did at North Dakota State can work at Kansas State, and for the love of God, do not let the Jayhawks pass us by. I think those are the only two things he has to do, and prove this can work at Kansas State really is only about making a bowl in the first three seasons, I think, for Kleeman.
I think so. And I think that there are certainly longer tail expectations to just generally become more nationally relevant. Now, for example, I think Kansas State would love to, I think they would love Kleeman to do what Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State.
Oh, sure.
Where let's become relevant in a conference that is still ultimately relevant. And so I think that they understand that they probably are not going to be building a year in and year out power, but them not making bowl games is not acceptable for really any Power Five school that cares about investing in their football program.
Yeah. All right. The next one, Manny Diaz at Miami. As we record this, we just found out Tate Martell not going to be the starting quarterback at Miami, at least not to begin the year, may not even be on the roster at Miami. And to me, Andrew, this makes it pretty clear. If you're Manny Diaz, you better find yourself an established starting quarterback within 3 years, the guy that can be the next one in that line of great traditional Miami quarterbacks, or you're probably on a hot seat because at that point you are not an upgrade at all over Mark Richt.
No, and I think that I think Miami fans more than anything And now, granted, you can attest to this a little bit better than I, just because I think that you remember prime U era more than I, but that was a team that really seemed predicated on not only being competent, like it doesn't ever seem like a slug them out defense wins championships type team would ever be a current version of a Miami team that people would really enjoy. I think right. They need a quarterback in there with a high flying offense. They need just a little bit. I mean, Miami is a substantive and a flash city. And I think that how it was in the 90s and the 2000s, I think that the only way for Miami to find real success with Manny Diaz is for him to be able to install a robust offense almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, you think about those 2000 teams. I mean, even for as good as the guys like Sean Taylor and Vince Wilfork and you know, that those guys on that 2000 mm-hmm. and 2001 team, as good as they were, you know, they also had Willis McGahee. They also had Frank Gore. They also had Andre, the wide receiver that went to Houston, whose name's escaping me at the moment.
Andre Johnson.
Thank you. Greg mm-hmm. Olson, back when he was G-Reg with the third leg. I mean, that was... That was who they were in the 2000s. In the 90s, when they had guys like Warren Sapp, you know, they also had guys like Lamar Thomas, who could take the top off of any defense in the country. So you're right. I don't think Miami fans, who may or may not be Russian bots on Twitter exclusively, I don't think they want to see their team, like, they love the turnover chain, but they don't like seeing their team win games 14-10. They just don't. And it doesn't matter if Miami goes 10-2, if 10-2 means, you know, 8 wins that are a matter of which team scored a third touchdown, they're not going to be satisfied. So I think Manny Diaz also sort of, what's the right way to say this? I think in the last few years, his success at Mississippi State, his even more success at Miami as a defensive coordinator, sort of overshadowed his struggles as the defensive coordinator at Texas, and he struggled mightily when he took over for Muschamp as the defensive coordinator at Texas. And so this is sort of the first time since then that he has had that kind of spotlight on him, and I wonder how he's going to respond here.
And I think that he's in an interesting position that you end up with a lot of these coordinator, like, you typically have two routes to go with head coaches. You go smaller school head coach, or you go coordinators. And so I think the schools that go coordinator heavy hires, whether it's going to be offensive or defensive, you have coaches that will either try and really assume and say, I'm the head coach now, I need to take responsibility for mm-hmm. my offense. Or you need to almost take the NFL comparison, the Sean Payton approach, where you say, I'm kind of resigned to the fact that I am not going to invest my personal resources into the side of the ball that I don't know. And so I'm interested to see, is Manny Diaz a guy that's going to assume ownership of the offense, or is he going to be, I'm going to focus, I'm going to double down on what I'm good at, and I'm going to delegate here?
Oh, I don't think it is a I think you can draw the conclusion from the fact of who he hired as his offensive coordinator, right? Dan Enos has experience as a head coach. Granted, it was at Central Michigan, but he's also now off the Saban tree and worked with the best quarterback in the country last year for 14 out of the 15 games played by the two best teams in America. I think that he very much is approaching this like the offense belongs to Dan Enos. And now Dan Enos' job is to make lemonade out of lemons at this point. All right, let's wrap with Ohio State and Ryan Day. To me, this is a two-tiered. This is less of a leash and more of a ladder, because he's got to win the Big Ten within 2 years, and I think he's got to play for a national championship within 4.
And he cannot lose to Michigan twice.
In a row or period?
In his first 2 seasons. I'm saying, even if they are nationally relevant, if there are losses to Michigan, that is almost a non-starter.
Yeah, interesting.
In addition, I guess my thought process here would be, if they were to go 11-1 and they were to lose to Michigan and miss out on the college football playoff because of that, in any other world, I would almost assume that as normalcy. But if that is then not corrected in year 2, I think that is still viewed as an indictment on Day.
You know, what's funny is I think of this, what Ryan Day is going to be facing. We had this joke in the Alabama fan base whenever Nick Saban loses to Ole Miss. We joke with each other, Mike Dubose never lost to Ole Miss. Time to fire Saban and bring Dubose back. Well, the difference is with Ryan Day, the guy that never lost to Michigan happened to be, this is by all measurable accounts, happened to be one of the best coaches that school has ever had. Happened to be one of the best coaches we've seen in this sport in the last 20 years. So, you know, with the Alabama fan base, it is a joke. With Ryan Day and Ohio State, Urban Meyer is going to cast a long shadow over his successor for a long time, especially, you're right, if in the first 2 years he is 0-2 against Michigan, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it does, boy, it's going to be tough to dig out of that. Because also, and we talked about this on a previous episode of this show, it's not just a matter of Urban Meyer casting a long shadow over Ryan Day and Ohio State. Luke Fickell is going to cast a longer shadow, I think, than a lot of people give him credit for if he keeps things rolling the way he is. Or he has them right now at Cincinnati.
And I think certainly expectations are going to come built into a job like Ohio State. But just adding pressure like that for bringing a guy like Justin Fields in is extremely interesting. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost now you have removed every excuse. It's not like, okay, we're Ohio State. We have a question at quarterback. We need to figure it out. It's one of those where, no, you have what has been, I mean, they're a top 10, 15 Heisman candidate, as many people have talked about, a former number one player in the country. And so you really are supposed to be, this is supposed to be your guy at quarterback. This is supposed to be your team that you can take care of. I mean, this has to be one of the best, really, 4 to 5 teams in college football this year. And I think especially because of the narrow margin in which they missed last year. I think Ohio State fans are just chomping at the bit to get back to the ability to play for a title.
No, I agree. And I mean, also the other part of it too, is last year when we looked at Ohio State, we said the offense has it rolling. The problem is Greg Schiano and that defense. And the problem is Alex Grinch can't get along with his personnel. And Alex Grinch is in Oklahoma now. Greg Schiano is sitting on a couch at home. Like, Ryan Day was elevated to offensive coordinator, or from offensive coordinator to head coach. And he didn't do this traditional thing where you've got to give that staff, that the defensive staff, 1 year to sort of figure out what they're doing before you decide if they're your guys or not. You're right. He got rid of all the possible excuses. And so I don't know that the fan base expects him to be a playoff team this year, but by next year, he better have that team back to being the dominant force in the East. But that is where we need to put a pin in it for tonight. He is Andrew Stevens. Stevenson, right? Stevens. You know what? You're only in charge of the site. I guess it's not super important. I know your name.
All good. It is all good. You only need to know first name.
Yeah, touche. I'm Dimitri Ravanis. Go to mybookie.ag. You know, with the boss man on the show tonight, I'm going to let you sort of hit the particulars, because something tells me I've been saying this wrong for quite some time. Are we still doing the $1,000 deposit bonus?
We are, in fact. We're going to
continue. Thank God.
Unfortunately, there has been just a little bit of complications, not complications, but just recent developments that we will be detailing, I'm sure, on this show starting next Monday. And so y'all will be hearing a little bit more of that, but we're going to bring some more sponsors into the fold, have a couple new shows, and really start tightening things up over here with Armchair. And so excited to have all the loyal listeners at Chewing Clock sort of follow along with us there. But yeah, make sure that y'all are following at Armchair Media on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. Tyler will be back tomorrow. We will talk to you then on a brand new edition of Chewing Clock.